You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Rochelle Voiles. Rochelle, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Rochelle, I'm really looking forward to talking about your beautiful show at 81 Leonard. And to jump right into it, what I thought would be kind of interesting to talk about, and maybe this is in part how you build these works or not, but there's framed works on paper that are color and black and white. Can you tell me a little bit about those? Those almost look like maquettes or sketches for the larger works in this show.
Yeah, I mean, my creative language has always been in collage. And my flat works are definitely my sketching, my drawing practice. I always like to say that I'm drawing with a blade. So, you know, in my flat works, I'm working through ideas. I'm coming up with different compositions, different shapes that I'm interested in. And these works have always been the basis of, you know, what the work I'm doing now has come from. I work from textile diagrams in my drawing language. So knitting, crochet, weaving, embroidery, knotwork. And so a lot of the shapes that appear in the flat works in the show are those.
So when you say you work from textile diagrams, I mean, I'm familiar with those textiles. The diagrams, you mean like when you're about to crochet or macrame or some of the things that you mentioned, there's a kind of diagram that you make in order to do those things?
Yeah. Have you ever seen the book, The Ashley Book of Knots? It's a really crazy compendium of like 400 pages of the history of knots. And they have drawings of how the knots are done with arrows of how the string or how the rope is pulled to make the knot.
Oh,
and
right.
So that would be an example of a diagram that I use. But there's other ones. There's like for climbers, there's a whole book of knots I have for just climbing and the way that the rope is drawn with the overlaps so you know how to pull the rope through. That would be another example. And for knitting and crochet, often the guide of how to make that type of cloth, they have a whole language of code, like chain two, chain one. But those diagrams as well, there's like drawings of the links of the fiber. But oftentimes, you know, the actual people who crochet and knit will use the written one with words.
That's so interesting. So, you know, and then now that you say that, I am aware of those things, and it is a little bit like kind of a composition. I mean, it's your eyes moving all around these things. It's almost choreography when I think of those knots and the arrows, and visually you're trying to, like, do that in your mind, right? Or at least I am when I see those things. Like, it goes where, and then what happens? And because they're not like a five-step process, right? They're showing you a knot with arrows, aren't they? It's not multi-step, or is it in that book that you mentioned, or the diagrams that you talk about?
It really depends on the fiber technique. But like, if we were going to go just to the world of knots, it sometimes it's numbered, and they'll show multiple steps of the knot in the diagram. Well, they'll be like, okay, this is the first turn of the rope, and then, you know, the diagram below that, number two, this is the second turn. But sometimes the diagrams, because I'm working from paper ephemera from years of collecting. So lots of, you know, fiber booklets like Work Basket from like 1967. I've just collected so much paper because I'm a collage artist for so many years that I've got these booklets of fiber and books on knitting and all that. And in these different booklets, sometimes they have it step by step. And then sometimes they have it just one image with arrows and numbers. And you're kind of, as a viewer, you're trying to figure out like, okay, this is the first step. This is the second step. This is what I do next.
Yeah, that's so cool because, of course, this is what colors the whole show, right? That kind of work, that kind of thinking is throughout this whole show, not just the initial collage work that we're talking about here, right? This is a theme, a way of thinking that runs through everything in this show, isn't it?
Yeah. The show has, I would say, three consecutive bodies of work, like things, ways of working that I have. where it's the flat paper collages, and then there's these very large scale pieces that are informed by the fiber diagram. They look snake-like, they look winding, there's the shapes kind of circle in one of them, and all of those are informed by these diagrams.
And so there was one work that I'd like to talk about next that seems a little bit close to those diagrams. It's black and white. It's four cutouts on the wall. One has a jawbone in the bottom of it. And this seems different than the rest, right? It's not like the large-scale work you were just talking about. It seems kind of in between and in a way more mysterious to me. There's some recognizable buildings in there. But let's talk about that one, the one that has the jawbone in it and these kind of unusual shapes that don't quite look like knots or diagrams, but are they?
Well, this one is the one piece in the show that's a bit of a departure. The way that the shapes came about were from cutouts in a flat collage that I was working on, and I was drawing from lace pattern. And so these shapes are referential to the organic kind of flowery lace and tatting diagrams and images that I was looking at. And it's kind of good that you bring this piece up because this and a few others in the show are what I call remnants. The process of making and the process that I go through to get to these is I use the cutout collage piece as the guide of how the shape comes about. Whereas the others that we were talking about before, the bigger works in the show, those are all from fiber diagram. And those shapes, I start from the shape and then I collage into the form. Whereas these, the collage tells me what the form and the cutout will be. This piece is also very interesting because that you bring up because it's lace with a jawbone and the lace pieces are from drone photography, and the other image that you're referencing next to the jawbone is a picture of D.C., Washington, D.C., the White House, and the jaw itself to the left of that. It's a bit of a more charged piece than the rest of the show, for sure.
And charged in what way? I mean, because of the White House in there, or and the portion of the skull, or charged in what sense?
I mean, I think the images, the source of the images is more political. It's more, I'm working with images from drone photography and the White House. And like the combination of collage in this one is more of a political, you know, the piece itself is titled Returned in Fragments. And so it's definitely about this connection of war and the United States government and, you know, we're very distant and departed from the actions of our government, but our government does a lot of that sort of thing.
And so you're telling stories with these, right? I mean, there's really very, though we can read these like, you know, in a kind of abstract and formal sense, there's something very specific happening in all of them, right? They're narratives, they're stories, they're images, they're pictures, and in some cases, even words, right?
Yeah. For sure. I mean, each piece that is in this show and each piece that I make is an attempt to decipher from leftover paper ephemera the story of us. And each piece is a little fragment, a little understanding of who we are, what we've done, what we, you know, our history, and what our future might be. So it depends on the piece, but I always see myself as my practice is an investigator, a detective. I'm trying to compile a dossier of, you know, this leftover evidence. I often see myself as like an alien in a trench coat, and I'm like trying to look through hundreds of thousands of images that have been left behind and just understand what it means to be human, what it means to live this life that we have.
I love that idea of an alien in a trench coat. That sounds great, you know, the type of detective to be writing novels about that, too. I want to talk about another piece in here that's a lot of blue, aqua, teal, green, It's one of the large scale pieces. It's almost symmetrical on the sides. It appears to be symmetrical, but at the top, it's asymmetrical. Can you tell me a little bit about this? There's so much imagery in here. There's eyes in here. There's, balloons in here. It just feels like there's worlds within worlds in here, that we're in the ocean, we're in the air. It seems, I know there's many that are very complex in here, but this strikes me as one of the more complex ones here.
This piece is interesting. I mean, like I said before, I take from textile diagrams. So this is an embroidery diagram that I replicated, made symmetrical, but then at the top, I didn't continue the symmetry. I was just drawing loosely on a piece of wood with a pencil and, to get the shape. I cut out all of my works in plywood, and I do multiple layers with a jigsaw. And then I'll go through all the labor of building the piece and making the substrate. And when I've come to that point where I have it up on the wall and it's primed and it's ready for collaging to the surface of, I will look at the shape and I'll look through all of my imagery and I'll think to myself, what does the shape want and what does the shape feel? It's actually quite woo-woo, but I'm always thinking, what's the energy of the shape and what's the narrative it desires to contain? And for this piece, it looked almost like an undersea creature. It looked like a bug. It looked like a strange alien energy form. And so the images that I was attracted to were images of dream, of illusion, of no temporal placement. I was very attracted to images of the sky and of the ocean and of the sea and of microscopic slides. And it felt like the narrative in this was the journey of the unknown and the capturing of the dream.
I love that so much. To talk a little bit about, because that's what it looks like to me too. It has kind of an aquatic shape form. It does look something like a, octopus or a variety of things. Alien, really, like you say, but something at once familiar too. You said you're using a jigsaw to build up the substrate, and you're using plywood. So I assume there's layers of plywood on there. But can you tell me a little bit about the jigsaw work? Because it has a beautiful line to it. These look like they're drawn, but a jigsaw is, I mean, I assume you have like a great blade and you're moving along here, but there's also holes in here. There's drilling. There's more than just a jigsaw, isn't there? Or no?
No, there is definitely more. I also own a scroll saw, which for the viewers, for the listeners, a scroll saw is got a very, very tiny blade. It's like almost like a jewelry saw, and it's very flexible. It's almost like a string. It wiggles, and you have to tune it when you install the blade every time. You need to tune it to the note of C, which is, wild, but that's how you know the tension is correct on the blade. So all of the pieces I like to cut in jigsaw. I've had a lot of conversations with people about, why don't you CNC and you should CNC. And maybe in the future, certain elements I will. But for right now, what I love about the jigsaw is the irregularity of it. When I'm cutting these shapes, it's so akin to my collage cuts and to my process in collage, where I'm really drawing with the blade. And so if mistakes happen with the jigsaw and there's a little irregularity, I love that irregularity because you can really feel the hand in the work. You can see the hand. Obviously, I'll drill. I'll use different types of Dremel to sand. I'll use trim routers. But I do, a combination of technology with archaic decisions. Because I have a little bit of a hand, I have a foot in the past, and I think that there's a lot that has been lost in the computerization and the digitization and the methods of working that we have now, where yes, we have laser cutters and yes, we have CNCs, but there's something that I love, which is the labor and the hand and the work.
I like that too, because the CNC routers, that's they're often computer driven, right? I mean, I don't know a lot about CNC routers, but I always thought that they were kind of programmed and computer driven.
Yeah, Yeah, you have to mock everything in different programs like Rhino and all that on the computer, and then you like feed it in, and then obviously there's settings and there's different parts to setting up the CNC that require human interaction and human setting, but it's quite digitized. But I think I also come from the Midwest, and I come from a blue collar family and from a history of people that they loved doing things with their hands and doing things themselves, a very DIY culture. So I am a champion of labor and a champion of doing things, a certain amount of things by hand, because there is a process and a joy that comes from the sweat of your labor and a pride.
And there's another one here that I'd like to talk about. It's unusual in the show also. I mean, they're all very different from one another, but this one is a circle, right? It seems almost like one continuous line. And the colors changes as it moves throughout, but it feels a bit like knots, but it also feels like it's coming undone in a way too. Let's talk about this one, because it feels like there's a few different states in here. It looks like there's almost a night scene, a day scene, like these are different scenes, or that's how I'm reading it. How did you intend this one? Are these kind of different vignettes almost within one piece?
So this piece was based off of the bowline knot, which is known as the king of knots. It's an ancient knot used for thousands of years that has a fixed loop at the rope's end. It like dates back to ancient Egyptian times. It was used on ships as a way to tie the ship to a dock securely. And it's repeated throughout the piece, but like in my drawing, I made a few of them a little bit bigger. I changed the spacing of the rope a bit, so it seems a little bit like it's oscillating. And it's like one, two, three, it's five knots in a row, all connected. And so when I made this piece, I was thinking a lot about knots as a symbol of security and nature as a place to return to again and again for security, safety, and comfort. And so all of the images in it are kind of the more mystical, magical representations of nature. The night sky, dew, dusk, microscopic images of those flowers that they're like pollinators that have they have the big bulbous end, and they have all of the little like cottonwood tree. Is what I'm thinking of, those seed pods, I think. I think that's what it is, where you blow and it goes everywhere. There's images of
Right.
that in here. Can't remember the name of the plant for the life of me. But just kind of, this piece is like, a cycling.
It's like the white seed head of a dandelion, I think.
That is it, yes. The seeding head of the dandelion flower.
But
There's
it's called
images
something
setting
else, right?
in.
As a kid, we didn't call it the seed head of a dandelion. I don't know, it was something else. I called it a wishing flower or something.
Ah, a wishing flower. See, but that's the type of image that's in this piece, is like that kind of mystical nature, or that like nostalgic, sweet, magical element of nature, the more mysterious nature. And so it's in like this little circle as a security blanket, almost, a security link.
And it's a link to home as well, you're saying. This is the environment that you grew up in, that kind of safety net in nature is where you found it.
Yeah, I mean, my mother was a gardener, and so was my father. So I always see nature and plants as a place of security and comfort. And they had quite a big garden when I was growing up, so I was always out there tilling the earth and planting seeds and plants with them.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful work, and I love the way you're talking about this. For listeners, of course, there's links here to see more, and hopefully you can get to see the show before it closes. I want to ask you one more question before we go a little off topic. What are you reading at the moment?
I'm reading a big pile of sci-fi. I'm reading a lot of fantasy and sci-fi. I'm working on another book in the Leviathan Wakes series, very like space exploration, dystopian planet vibe. I just finished The Tainted Cup series. I bet that book was on my nightstand. Lots of like crazy sci-fi. The Tainted Cup is more of like a murder mystery detective situation. Another dystopian planet in the future. I've always loved sci-fi. I'm a big fan of Philip K. Dick and Ursula K. Le Guin.
I love that. And so those really are working their way into this works a little bit too, right? When you're talking about an alien in a trench coat, that's a little bit like some of this, isn't it? Or no?
No, for sure, definitely. There's a piece in the show called Slithering Ruin, which is kind of an apocalyptic, like a look into our mythos around the apocalypse and around the end. And that piece ends at the very top with what looks to be some quite intense mechanization, very Ex Machina style. And so it's this like journey, slithering journey through, there's images in there of really intense moments in our history as a country and intense moments historically and globally that one would say signal the end, quote unquote. And at the very top of the piece, you go from the biblical creation imagery at the very bottom, and you go all the way up to this like mechanization, dystopian sci-fi, where it just the piece cuts at the very top, and you don't know what's going to be next. So there's definitely some sci-fi influence in a lot of these works.
It's a beautiful show. I want to encourage listeners to go see the show before it closes on April 11th. And Rochelle, I want to thank you so much for talking with me today. I really appreciate your time and this beautiful show.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you for having me. I had such a lovely time. It was great to get to sit and chat with you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.